There's not a great leader on this earth that says they're a great leader. If I ask a truly great leader, are you a great leader? You know what they'll say? Well, you know what? I made my share of mistakes. I've learned a lot. Whether I'm a great leader or not, I don't know. But here are my results, and here's what I've achieved. You don't get to call yourself a great leader. It's what other people say about you. I'm Michael Mogul, founder and CEO of Crisp, the nation's number one law firm growth company. I've built my business through practice, not theory. Crisp started with just $500 to my name and has grown to over eight figures in revenue over the last few years, earning a spot on the Inc. 500 list of the fastest growing private companies in America. Our approach has been to take everything we've learned about generating massive growth within our own organization and help the country's most ambitious and committed law firm owners do the same for theirs. In each episode of this podcast, I sit down with innovative market leaders from the legal industry and beyond to learn from those who thrive in the face of adversity, challenge the status quo, and define what it means to be a true game changer.
This is Jessica, Head of Coaching Strategy at Crisp, and today we're flipping the script for another special edition episode to get Michael's take on how to scale an eight-figure law firm to a nine-figure law firm, how to hold yourself accountable to working on your business, breaking free from the day-to-day grind, and why leverage is the single most important factor in growing your business.
Leverage is the difference between what you put in and what you get out, and you have effectively zero leverage if you are doing everything. But you have a ton of leverage if you come up with the idea where you map out the plan and you've got a team of people that work collaboratively together to actually get it done.
That's coming up on the Game Changing Attorney Podcast. Here we are, another AMMA.
We are back for another one. Another one already?
Your favorite.
Feels like we just did one.
Or two.
Yeah, you're right. So welcome back to the show, the Ask Michael Mogul Anything. You guys submit your questions. You can text us at 404-531-7691, and we might just answer your question on the show. And if you're tuning in, there's also the other types of episodes. We've got a traditional interview format where we bring in experts from the legal industry and beyond. And then we've got our encore editions, some of the most popular episodes. Man, these bangers. I'm telling you, these episodes come back. They're 10 times more popular than they were in the first time we recorded the podcast. And I mean, I think it's just because the podcast has grown so much. So speaking of which, because the podcast has grown so much, you want to know why it's grown so much? Because of listeners like you who tune in and share the show and help us reach more great people. So there's no ads on the podcast. We could get some ads if you guys want some ads. Get some sponsors if you guys want some sponsors. But then you'd be interrupted constantly for ads about underwear and butt wipes and all sorts of different things, and greens powders. So a point is that we do not run any ads on this podcast, so we can say whatever the hell we want. And this allows our guests to be able to say whatever the hell they want. But in order for this to be true, there is a fee for the podcast. And we ask that you please, please, please leave us a five-star review on Apple Podcasts and share the show with a friend. If you find it valuable, if we make you laugh, whatever. Any episode, if you could do it right now, in fact, you could do it while you're listening. While you're listening right now, you can leave a five-star review and say, hey, I really love the show for this X, Y, and Z reason. Or if you don't feel that way, then don't leave a review. Anyway, my point is we will keep the podcast free so long as you guys help us to share the show. Otherwise, I'm going to take their money, okay? But instead, we decide that our principles are more important than any ad dollars. So we will proceed so long as you share the show and tell your friends about it. All right, Jessica, what questions we got for this one?
Now that that's out of the way. All right, so first one up is actually from a listener. They're referencing a previous episode. So in one of your recent episodes, you gave some advice to listeners who want to start their own law firms. While I'm sure it resonated with many, I'm on the other end of the spectrum. I opened my firm 20 years ago and have grown it to an eight-figure firm. While I'm proud of its growth, I'm frustrated that my firm has plateaued. For the last 3 years, we've been at $25 million. How do I break through this plateau and double my revenue?
Yeah, it can be frustrating. Pulling in $25 million a year, every single year. I mean, I share your frustration. I get it, for real. I mean, this is actually why when we started our coaching programs, we started with Crisp X. We wanted to create an entrepreneur support group for the highest level of law firm in America, right? And then since then, we rolled it out to other revenue ranges. So I do understand. So how do you double if you've been stuck? Well, there's really no easy answer to this without knowing your specific business, but I'll give you some of the most common things that happen. And the reality of it is that there's a saying that your business is perfectly designed to get you the results that you're getting. So what you are getting is a $25 million law firm. And it seems like it's designed in a perfect system to yield $25 million in revenue a year. It is not designed for $50 million. It is not designed for $60 million and $70 million. And you're like, what? Yeah, absolutely. It's never going to do that. Ever. Ever. So what do you do? Well, you're probably going to blow the whole thing up, to be honest. And I don't mean blow up the firm, but the reality of it is there's probably reasons why the firm is doing $25 million consistently year over year. Now there's everything's coming in inbound, right? So you can look at it from the standpoint of how much of the phone's ringing and are clients referring to us and what types of cases are we bringing in? What's our average case value? I don't know the area of practice here, but just you can look at it from the standpoint of like, what is our average case value? And if that has not changed, then you look at the number of cases and then you look at the cost of acquisition and you can look at those variables and say, well, how's that changing year over year, right? And if your marketing investment hasn't changed, well, I mean, that's easy, right? Just scale that up. First and foremost, it's like you want to grow your law firm. You don't want to spend more on marketing, but are you nuts? How the hell else are you going to do it? Then there's the aspect of like, well, what's falling through the cracks? And you start to audit your intake of starting to see, are we answering our phones promptly? What about after hours? What about on weekends? What about, you know, in terms of when we are answering the phones, are we consistent in terms of like signing cases? You know, do we have a trained intake team? This is like Schrodinger's cat, right? It's like, is the cat alive or is it dead? You don't know until you open the box, right? And if you don't open the box, is the cat still alive? So the point is that you must call your law firm. Call your law firm today. See how the phones are answered. Submit a contact form or you know, a free case evaluation on your website and see what happens from there. Secret shop your own law firm. And that's how you can find, okay, what is the consistency of intake? What's going on there? I do this all the time with the business. They never know if it's me. And obviously don't do it on your email, your same email. And don't be like, don't be
or
you.
Phone number.
Right? Come on, man. You got to like secret shop this thing. So that's probably like one or two. But then it's looking at, what about our people? And what about the team that we have on board? Are these the people that are going to be capable of helping us scale to the next level? I mean, I know we worked with a firm that, you know, a great firm. They were stuck at like $40 million year over year over year. Maybe they broke to $50 million at one point, but they were there for years. And it was a volume-based firm. You know, they're settling a lot of cases, but in order for them to really move to that next level, they had to bring in a trial team and start to really bring in and attract seven-figure cases, eight-figure cases consistently instead of sending those out. Because when you send it out and you're paying a fee, that's your cost of acquisition, right? And that can have a very heavy cost of acquisition. So wouldn't you rather those cases just come to you in-house and then you be able to work those cases in-house? And in order to work them in-house, you've got to have capable trial lawyers. So that was a massive investment to me, you know, and it's a big shift in the positioning of the firm. It took years. And this past year, this firm cleared nine figures, over $110 million. So it's realizing that we're going to have to make some dramatic changes in our practice if our goal is to double. And that starts, you know, really, you have to look at it at all levels. It's not about, like, I think, you know, some sort of massive change, you know, in any one thing, but it's, are we maximizing all of our efficiency, right? So you start looking at like conversion rates and percentages, and even a small shift in percentages of like 2, 3, 4, 5% can represent a massive amount, especially at high volume. So if you look at like, well, what's our conversion percentage, right? And you're able to get that number up by 5%, that can represent millions of dollars. And then what percentage of our clients are referring other clients? And what, you know, how many of our referral partners, like how many cases are they referring to us? Like, what are we doing in terms of community outreach? You know, how is our cost of acquisition changing and evolving by source, right? You have to really get forensic with this stuff. So, and I don't mean to give like a complicated answer. It's just understanding that first and foremost, before anything else, is that your current law firm is designed to give you the results that you're getting. And this is no different. You say for a $25 million firm that wants to make $50 million, then a law firm that's a $1 million that wants to make $5 million. Your $1 million law firm is designed to make you $1 million. It's not designed to make $5 million. It's not designed to make $10 million. You are not going to get lucky. That will not change. What it means is that you have to change how the firm is run, the people in it, the systems, like the investment that you put in it, et cetera. Like all that has to change. I mean, I remember we were one type of business at $1 million, another type of $5 million, another type of $10 million, another type of $20 million, another type of $40 million, et cetera. It's dramatically different. At each level, it was unrecognizable to the previous level. And if we stayed the same, well, our revenue and profit would stay the same. So it's just recognizing that if you want to achieve something different, if you want different results, then you need different actions. And that typically means the organizational structure of the organization has to change as well.
Yeah. And I would say this is an assumption based on the question, but if they've been sitting there for quite some time, the owner is probably comfortable where they're at. And it would also be asking yourself, are you personally willing to make that change?
Yeah.
And really defining, are there non-negotiables? Have you set up a certain lifestyle that you're really comfortable with? You want change? Are you willing to also change internally as well.
I know we've answered this on a previous AMMA, but it's also the question of like, well, why do you want to double? Right?
Yeah.
Like what's the difference between 25 and 50 million to you besides a higher number? And is it just because you're trying to chase the scoreboard, or does it produce some sort of meaningful change in, you know, the way in which you're able to spend your time and the work you're able to do and how you're able to serve your community, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Like, is there a reason for this that it's a compelling enough reason to actually do it? Because if there isn't, then look inward at yourself. And are you willing and are you courageous enough to make the changes necessary to achieve those results? And again, there's nothing wrong with $25 million a year. There's absolutely nothing wrong with it. Most law firms don't ever come near that. I mean, it's not going to happen for them. The fact that you've done that, you deserve, I think, a good degree of credit. But if you're an insatiable beast and you want to double that and you want to get to 50 million, well, chances are you got to go back to your origin story, and you're going to have to make a ton of changes.
Yep.
Probably half the organization is not going to make it.
Nope.
Like, you're going to have to make a substantially larger investment in your marketing, in your infrastructure, in your people. You're going to have to spend your time completely different. And then it's possible. And it's a question of, are you willing to do the things necessary to achieve the results that you want?
Exactly. All right. Next one. So I've built a thriving law firm, but I struggle to step away from the day-to-day grind. How can I break free from the operational task and focus more on working on my business rather than in it? And this firm is also on pace to exceed 30 million this year.
There we go. How do I break free? Well, you know, it's a common saying. I was talking to a gentleman a couple of weeks ago, and it was probably similar in revenue, probably between like 20 and 40 million in revenue, right? Probably wide range, right? Is it 20 or is it 40? Okay, let's just say eight figures. And I remember that they were telling me, they're like, man, I've made it, and I'm working 60, 70 hours a week. And I said, if you're so successful, then why are you working 60, 70 hours a week, right? So if the question is, it's like, well, how do I step away from the day-to-day grind? Well, first and foremost, it starts with you and your willingness to let go. And typically, I think as leaders, someone's not as willing to let go. And at least in their mind, what they tell themselves is that I don't want to let go because I don't trust these people to do it as well as I can, right? And as soon as I let go, then the business is going to decline and we're going to become less competitive. And then eventually we're going to go out of business, and that you are the one keeping everything together. If that is true, first and foremost, well, then you're not a really great leader, because if it is still solely dependent upon you and you're the one keeping everything together, I mean, probably good for ego purposes, but not so good when it comes to a sustainable business and a sustainable organization. Because if anything ever happened to you, well, that business isn't very valuable, right? If you were the one keeping it all together. Because if something happened, well, then Jenga, the whole thing collapses. Alternatively, you look at it from the standpoint of, all right, well, I can't get out of the day-to-day grind because, well, maybe you don't have somebody who can free you up. Or maybe you don't have capable enough individuals. Like, you may have people that, you know, get their job done, but nobody who really can step in and lead the organization and be, you know, oversee the day-to-day. You know, there's this concept in EOS and in the book Gino Wickman talks about in Traction, but even in Rocket Fuel, of like this visionary and integrator dynamic, where you've got the visionary, where it's typically the founder of the organization. They've got all the ideas, they get the vision, they think ahead, they're strategic. And then you've got the integrator that is on the execution piece, right? They help get everything done. And, you know, that was kind of the dynamic between Jessica, you and I for many, many years. And now we've got our COO, Alex. So it's important to have like the person who can think into the future. And then there's the person who works in the present and makes sure that everything gets done. And it's not them doing every task. I think sometimes people misunderstand this. It's not the person who does everything. They are the person accountable for overseeing that everything gets done. Okay. Now there's a distinction between the two. The does everything person physically, mentally does everything. They check off every box. They complete every single task. The person accountable for ensuring that it gets done works through other people. Okay, so this is helping to make sure that other people are getting things done. And that's the only way you can build a great organization, because you need a thing called leverage. And leverage is the difference between what you put in and what you get out. And you have effectively zero leverage if you are doing everything. But you have a ton of leverage if you come up with the idea, or you map out the plan, and you've got a team of people that work collaboratively together to actually get it done. That's amazing. That's called leverage. That's how you scale. You think Elon Musk is overseeing the production of any single like Tesla vehicle? Or you think that Tim Cook at Apple is overseeing the production of any single iPhone? Like, whether Tim is asleep or whether Tim is awake, iPhones get produced. And same thing with iPads and iMacs and Apple Watches, etc. Like, the person in China is going to receive their Apple Watch whether Tim wakes up or does not wake up. Same way someone in North Dakota will receive their iPad whether Tim is there or not. It's called leverage. That's what makes them one of the most valuable companies on the planet. So the goal is, how can we get things done through other people? Coming back to this, it starts with having the mindset that you do not have to do everything, and that you can build a team of really competent, capable individuals and empower them to be able to grow and lead other aspects of your organization. And now, look, they can report to you, they can provide you with updates, etc. But I think it's letting go of the ego piece, that you are so valuable, that you're so needed, that you are so necessary, that everything relies on you. And instead of realizing that it's actually a strength when it's the opposite. I can come in and be useless. Well, we built a pretty good business, right? That makes me pretty proud. It makes me excited. And I see a lot of firm owners that they're the chief rainmaker in their law firm, which is great. You put up awesome numbers. I'm giving you a high five for that. But you know what's really cool? Is when your team puts up awesome numbers. You're still making the same damn money. You're just not doing any of it, right? Isn't that amazing? Right? You've empowered others to do that within your organization. You've created opportunity for other people to be able to support themselves and their families and make an impact. And that's much more scalable too, because you only have a certain number of hours in a day. You got to pee, you got to poop, you got to go to the bathroom, you got to eat, you got to do all sorts of things. You got to sleep. I mean, how much can one person possibly do? But a team of great people, wow. I mean, it's endless. I mean, the opportunities are infinite of what you can achieve with a great team. So if you want to get out of the day-to-day, you got to make that mental shift of realizing that, you know what, first of all, I have to be able to rely on other people, and I have to be able to find great people that can lead other aspects of my organization, and I have to learn to delegate. That's probably the single biggest mental shift yet to make. And then from there, it's sticking with that decision even when they mess up and they screw up, because it's not like you've never messed up.
You got to put checks and balances.
You got to put the checks and balances in place. What else? Did I answer the question?
Yes, I think that answered your question. Last one today. For those of us already at the top of our game, what do you believe is the real X factor that differentiates the best law firm owners from the rest?
Ooh, the X factor.
It's a bold question.
Those of us on top of our game. Who are those of us? I don't feel I'm on top of my game.
Well, let's see who submitted. I'm just kidding. I'm not going to reveal any names.
We are on top of our game. I'll tell you what. Usually the people who say that are not on top of their game. I was reviewing some candidates this past week for some leadership hires. And I remember watching the video that one of them has submitted, and I was able to rule them out immediately.
It's immediately, like less than a minute.
5 seconds. Yeah. You know how? They started the video by saying, I'm a great leader. And I said, look, goodbye. You're like, wait, what? You didn't give them a chance? There's not a great leader on this earth that says they're a great leader. If I ask a truly great leader, are you a great leader? You know what they'll say? Well, you know what? I made my share of mistakes. I've learned a lot. Whether I'm a great leader or not, I don't know. But here are my results, and here's what I've achieved. And you can speak to some of the people that I've had the fortunate opportunity of leading, and you can hear their perspective from them. You don't get to call yourself a great leader. It's what other people say about you. It's like, I'm a great cook. I don't want to eat that. Okay. So anyway, what's the X factor?
So assuming they are actually at the top of their game.
At the top of their game. You're not at the top of your game. If you think you're at the top of your game, you're not at the top of your game. When Tom Brady's winning Super Bowls, you ask him, hey, are you at the top of your game? He say, nope. And if that man won consecutive Super Bowls and he says he's not at the top of his game, you ask Nick Saban, hey, Nick Saban, you know, when you're winning national titles, are you at the top of your game? You say, nope. You know, still got a lot of room for growth. Still got a lot of room for improvement. So who are you? Who are you to say you are at the top of your game? How do you even know what the top of your game is? Maybe you're at like the middle of your game right now, and then there's a whole other Everest above that that you haven't even explored yet, because you mentally, in your mind, you think you're at the top of your game. Wild. So what's the X factor? We touched on it a bit this episode. I think the X factor of the most successful is a couple things. Number one, it's leverage. It is those who are able to exercise leverage within their organization. So they have a tremendous amount of output relative to the input that they put in. So they may not be in the day-to-day anymore. They may be focusing on the future, but that gives them a tremendous amount of leverage because they work on the business. They're working on the law firm that's going to exist 3 years from now, 5 years from now, 10 years from now. Well, everything still is able to get done because they've got a great team around them. They've got a great executive leadership. They've got great people. They've got a great culture. They can get a whole lot done, and they can just really move the ball forward. I think that's, you know, that's number one. Number two is courage. It's just they're courageous. They're willing to disrupt the status quo. They're willing to write that check. They're willing to make that investment. They're not little scaredy cats. They don't ever say shit like, I'm going to wait this out. I'm going to see what happens. Like, absolutely not. They are decisive. They're decisive. They're focused. They're dialed in. And when I say they're focused, it's like they say no to most things. And when they dial in on the right area of opportunity, they go all in. They don't just dabble. They don't stick their little toe in the water, feel out the water. You know, it's like when I deal with people like this, it drives me insane. How weak, right?
Don't commit.
This bothers me. Other people rely on your decision making, and you cannot make decisions, and you're not sure, and you're like, should I not? Like this kind of, oh my God. Like people with families rely on your decision making, and you've self-appointed yourself as a leader. Unbelievable. I feel for them. It's like, oh God, you're doing them a disservice. And look, this isn't to say anyone's, you know, great out of the womb, right? You don't just become a great leader immediately, but it's like, you got to work on that. Because guess what? If you're scared, they're going to be scared. If you're indecisive, they're going to be indecisive. In the same way, it's like if you exhibit courage, then they're going to exhibit courage and you're going to see more innovation within your organization. So like I said, I think the best leaders, they exhibit leverage and they have great leverage because they've built great teams, great systems within their firms. And then they're courageous. They're willing to continuously invest into the future, into their people, into their infrastructure, that they're willing to write that check even when it hurts and even when it's scary. And that's what I found year over year. I'm telling you, of course, it's scary when you're just starting out and you're like, well, it must be easier for the person who's at, you know, 50 million or 60 million or 70 million in revenue to write that big check, right? It's easier for them to be courageous. Well, then here's the thing you don't understand. You know how scared you get right now? Let's say you're at a million, maybe under a million in revenue for your firm, and you get scared right now and you're writing, you know, I don't know, $5,000 check or $10,000 check. Well, they're not writing a $10,000 check. Sometimes they're writing a $10 million check or a $20 million check. So it hits them the same way. It's just as scary. It's not courageous if they're doing the same thing that they were doing when they were at a million.
Just adding zeros.
But when you get to that point, and I remember when we were even in our current office, so like Crisp HQ in 2020, pandemic's going on, right? We decided to build out this space, right? $20 million. Now we had done some things before, like we'd hosted some big events, we'd given away a bunch of cars, there was bouts of courage, we've expanded our team, we invested in our infrastructure, but that was scary as hell. Absolutely, I mean, that was scary as hell. I couldn't sleep at night. I remember thinking, God, man, what, you know, is it going to work? And then since that time, I mean, I remember, you know, a couple years after that, we did the event at Mercedes-Benz Stadium, this law firm growth conference, $8 million for that one day event, right? It's like you constantly have to exhibit courage, because if I go back and I say, hey, take away everything that we've done that's required courage, well, we would never be where we are today. Not even close. We wouldn't even be sitting here recording this podcast. We wouldn't have the client community that we do today. We wouldn't have the Game Changers Summit. We wouldn't have, you know, empowered so many people and impacted so many people. It just wouldn't have happened, because on the other side of courage is all that impact and all that achievement. And yes, there's been things that have not gone our way and there's been things that haven't worked, but it's having the courage to persevere and persist and solve all those different challenges. And look, it's never easy. It's not like courage is easier for me than it is for you. That's why it's called courage. It's scary as hell. The difference is that you give in to that fear and I feel it, and I keep doing it, and I keep moving forward. And it's the same thing with anybody who is, you know, high achieved, or I wouldn't say at the top of their game, but is trying to get to the top of their game. It's like they're constantly in their mind having that bitch voice that's telling them, hey, take it easy, relax, you've done enough, like maybe you shouldn't, maybe this is not going to work out, and they do it anyway. And the person that gives in says, you know what, maybe you're right. I got this gut feeling that maybe this isn't the right thing to do. And it's like, dude, maybe your gut's wrong. Look around you. Look around you in your life. Do you, like, are you spending your time how you want to be spending? Are the people around you taken care of? Are you making the impact that you want to be making? Is your firm where it needs to be? And if it's not, maybe your gut instinct isn't right. Maybe the decisions you're making are not aligned with where you're trying to go. Like, sometimes you have to take a survey of everything around you and have an honest conversation and look in the mirror and say, is this moving in the direction that I want it to? In the direction of the vision that I have for my law firm? And if it's not, maybe you need to reconsider the types of decisions you're making. It's like George Costanza, right? In that episode of Seinfeld, where one day George decides, you know what? I'm going to make the opposite of every decision I would normally make. And I'm going to see what happens in my life. Before you know it, George starts making the opposite decision and his life becomes amazing. Like where he would have said no, he says yes. Where he says yes, he says no. And it's like the opposite. So sometimes you just got to do the opposite. Like if you're in a really bad place, it's like, what do you have to lose? Chances are your decisions to this point really haven't gotten you to the place you wanted to get to. So if you need to start making different decisions.
It's like that dinner in Spain.
Yes.
I had a waiter that really, really stuck with us for many years.
Oh, yes.
I ordered something and I was like, I don't know, I'm on the fence about this. He said the words of wisdom, if you don't like, change.
That's it. If you don't like, change. So it's having that courage, the courage to do the things that make you uncomfortable. And look, everybody says they want to get uncomfortable. It's funny. It's like every time I interview someone, it's like, what do you want? I just want to be uncomfortable. All right, cool. Let's go hop into my cold plunge, right? No.
Not that uncomfortable.
Not that uncomfortable. Oh, okay. I see. So maybe you don't want to be uncomfortable. Maybe you need to be uncomfortable. And maybe you need to put a forcing function in place. Sometimes it's not about what we want. To achieve the things that we're committed to achieving, we got to do what we need to do.
All right. That's it on the X Factor.
All right. See you next time.
You've been listening to the Game Changing Attorney Podcast with Michael Mogul. If you found this episode valuable, here are three free ways that we can help you grow your law firm. Number one, download the first chapter of Michael's book absolutely free at gamechangingattorney.com. Number two, you can shoot Michael a text at 404-531-7691 and ask him any question you'd like. You might just hear the answer on the next episode. And finally, number three, if you can leave this podcast a five-star review, it will help us gain access to more influential thought leaders and bring their lessons learned here to you. For more information on this episode, see the show notes in your podcast app or visit legalpodcast.com. We'll be right back.